and I can't lie. I'm still teacher's pet at Carter High, and I'm real laid back and like one of a kind. And if I leave East Point, it'll be hard to find. Rico used to tell me when I turned 19, I'm gonna be big in the South like buffalo wings. And I've been blowing up the spot since the single came out, and I'm starting to make a little money. It's getting hard to count. If I carry any with me, it's in a small amount, and I keep the rest in a stash by my auntie house. So check the internet for when I hit your local stages of the Dirty South Pages under South Coast Phrases.
Hey, you got that? Hey, people.
Better have my donuts up here on Bad News Ramen. We're here to discuss the wrestling business. Probably the first order of the day is to talk about the newly crowned champion of the WWE, which is the vacant champion. You know, the guy that stands where he has no body or no face or anything like that. So
the mannequin.
The mannequin, yeah. Daniel Bryan got stripped of his title, and we have a pretty much so far, pretty much kind of boring group of ne'er-do-wells that are vying for the championship. So I want you to kind of, you were alluding to this later on, or earlier before, and I kind of want you to kind of put a kind of tombstone on Daniel Bryan's supposed WWE title run and how you feel about it.
Why is it a supposed title run? I mean, it happened.
It happened, but it, once again, it got shortchanged.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I have anything new on the subject, but, I mean, my stance has been that they wasted about 2 or 3 good months that he could have been champion and done something with it, where they just, you know, they're trying to extend the story, but I don't think it did anything to help the story or help Daniel Bryan. He actually lost momentum, in my estimation. And then the big issue, they finally give him the belt, and then the best they get out of it is like a couple matches with Kane. Like, it makes no sense to me.
This is Kane, G.
Yeah, Kane, what's up, G?
That's too inside. No, nobody would get that.
You started it.
I know.
I just responded. So, yeah, I mean, it sucks because, I mean, I think he's got a lot to offer, and it's going to be rare that he's, that they're going to give a guy like him, you know, the opportunity. And they gave him, you know, they pretty much hamstrung him the whole time that they were giving this supposed push. So definitely his profile went up. I mean, you know, that's kind of the talk, right? It's like you say, okay, well, you know, is he in a better spot now than he was before? I'd say yes. His profile got raised in this. But, like, it's just like an unfulfilled.
Really?
Like,
you thought his profile got raised because of this? Because I don't see. I thought he was in a better spot 6 months ago than he is today. I mean, if you look at him, like, winning the championship, he hasn't had any of the kind of, when a guy finally wins a championship, from, like, say, Eddie Guerrero to Chris Benoit to CM Punk or any guy that kind of got over the hump, he hasn't had any press, you know, even with, like, I don't know if it's like a WWE magazine. I don't even know if that's still around. But, I mean, there's been no, like, soft fluff stories for this guy. He hasn't had, like, any kind of, there was no, like, kind of PR movement with comparison to the Yes movement of, like, mainstream media. Like, at least doing, like, a fluff story on this guy,
I don't know. I mean, I think that, like, see, I think what it is when he kept getting his fluff stories was when they wouldn't give him the title. And then they finally got the title. But, like, what I've been saying, the momentum, like, you know, the Yes movement had already hit its crescendo, and it seemed like, I don't know, I mean, it kind of felt like they only gave it to him because of the backlash that they were facing, like, with CM Punk being gone, and Batista at that time was just, like, full-on flopping, and I think I don't even know if they were going to really give him the belt, or if that was just, like, a desperation move, okay, we got to do this now, so, like, if he had, I don't know, if they had given them the belt like 2 months earlier, like they should have when he was fighting Randy Orton, then all that stuff would have lined up well, and he would have had his moments. But the moments that he was having when he was putting on great matches week after week, he didn't have the belt.
Yeah, and he never, I mean, it's never kind of a case where he had like a nice run where after the belt he kind of had some like fluff matches and stuff, and they're kind of, you know, just like letting him show, really showcase what he can do in the ring.
Made him fight Kane, which was bad.
Do you think that they could have protected him, like with this kind of like legit injury? I mean, because to me, it's just sad to see that this guy finally gets over the hump, and they're finally gonna like, give this guy a run. And yeah, Kane was like the first opponent, and they, you know, they were going to kind of let him win and kind of hold the belt. That was like, kind of like his first trimester of a champion, right? And then he had some legitimate things, like he got married, his dad died, and then he got an actual injury. And it's just kind of a case where I felt, you know, you can still protect the guy, even though he's injured. Like, protect him, you know? Like, you don't have to strip the belt. And then you put it, you have these guys that are going to vie for the belt. And all these guys that, like, have won a spot to be in the King of the Ring, they have faced the same guy for the past 6 months. I mean, it's like RVD versus Cesaro. I've never seen that before. And then you have Wade Barrett versus Sheamus. Never seen that match before either. Alberto Del Rio versus Ziggler. I have never, ever seen that match before in my life. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, there's kind of a couple things I want to get into this. I mean, I want to start off with Daniel Bryan, but I think the first thing we have to do, or maybe the second thing we have to do, is some very, very sad news.
You want to wrap up with Daniel Bryan first?
We can wrap up with Daniel Bryan after. But our boy Bob Welch passed away today. Born in 1956, died today in like 2014. And he had like a good, like, I'd probably say a good 3-year run where he was always overshadowed by Dave Stewart. Like, we were big Dave Stewart fans. He won like 28 games 1 year. And guy was just like 27, which was the most in like history since like the dead ball era.
Yeah, well, they're talking about him today, and I guess he's the only guy since 1980 that's won over 25, and you know, he eclipsed that pretty good at 27.
And he wasn't a dominant pitcher, like he didn't do a lot of strikeouts, but the guy was just like a straight ground ball pitcher, dude. And our favorite, at least my favorite thing, and I kind of brought it to light one day. Whereas he probably had, like, he was like one of the only few pitchers where he would get the ball grounded back to him maybe about 5-6 times a game. I mean, when this guy was on, he was just like, everything was like a flipping ground ball. And it was like he was tailor-made for those 27 wins because he had Walt Weiss, he had Gags at second, and Carney at third, and then a really, like, undervalued first baseman in Mark McGwire. So he had, like, probably one of the best defensive infields of all time. But he'd get like 5 or 6 outs a game where it was just a soft dribbler straight back to pitcher. He would field it, and he would stop for like maybe 3 seconds, like kind of look at the ball and like, you know, make sure the seam is right and like put a little smiley face with his marker or something like that. And then
have
he'd
a sandwich, yeah, take a Coke.
A sandwich. And then he'd throw it to first base, and we kind of had this whole thing where we called it, was like, you know,
he's collecting himself.
He collected himself, making sure that he could do the right throw, and then he'd throw it to first base. So, I mean, I was shocked. I mean, first you have Don Zimmer pass away, and you kind of have all these kind of plebeians out there talking about, oh, the thing I remember about Don Zimmer was
getting tossed by Pedro.
Yeah, it's like, come on, dude. I mean, Don Zimmer's career was so much more better than that. I mean, he played with Jackie Robinson. He won a world championship with the Brooklyn Dodgers with Jackie Robinson. His only paycheck that he ever collected in his life was from Major League Baseball. And if you can do that, and you're pretty much, like, still getting paid as you pass away from Major League Baseball, that's a flipping great life. And Bob Welch never got the credit that he was given. Because even when he won those 27 games, if you had to choose between Dave Stewart and him, you'd pick Dave Stewart over Bob Welch. And that guy, you know, like, a lot of people will talk about the pitcher from the Red Sox with the famous ketchup.
Clemens? No, Schilling.
Yeah, Schilling. And everybody's, you know, like, Schilling is like a great pitcher. And they say, like, Schilling's a really good pitcher, this, that, and this. And it's like, he knows how to control a game. Well, Bob Welch was like the epitome. or epitome of a guy that could control a game with his pitching. And it's just just kind of came out of nowhere, you know. And yeah. I'm not really happy right now, and I don't know what else to say about the guy, but he will be missed, and he provided a lot of good baseball memories and a lot of good guffaws on our part at like 11:30, 11:45 at night when we're supposed to be sleeping because we have a big tournament tomorrow in soccer, and we're laughing over ball bullets and shit. So, Bob, you're the man, dude, and thank you for the memories, and that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right. I think you covered it all. I don't think there's much to add. Yeah, we always talked about the gathering of his thoughts before he'd pick up the grounder and make that throw over to first. And yeah, I just always think it's funny. I think both he and Stu, overall of baseball, are pretty undervalued. And you know, Stewart has four straight 20-win seasons and can't win a Cy Young. And Bob Welsh was always, you know, right there with him, but not quite as good as Stu. And then the 1 year, Welsh just bubbles up and goes 27 and wins the Cy. Just like, dude.
And Stu won like 22 games or something like that, right?
Right, yeah. It was in the middle of like, those four-year run, right? And, I mean, you don't ever see two 20-win pitchers on the same team anymore. And you're never going to see anybody that gets four straight 20-win seasons like Stu did.
And their number three starter was Matt Moore.
Yeah.
And that guy won like 16, 18 games. And that guy was terrible, but he still won like 18 games, you know?
And none of them are in the Hall of Fame.
No.
But Schilling and his bloody sock are.
Bob, you should have cut yourself, dude. I can see Bob. I mean, like, even like, here's the thing with Bob Welsh was that, I think he pitched for the Yankees, dude.
No, Dodgers.
Dodgers, but he faced the Yankees in the World Series. And he was like this young, up-and-coming kid and just locked down the Yankees 1 year. And I saw like an old game of him, and like he had way more talent back when he was younger. He was like some like hotshot 20-year-old pitcher just like blowing by everybody. And then, but there wasn't that big of a difference from, you know, maybe he had more velocity on his pitches, but I mean, that guy was like a phenom. And it's just kind of like funny without the kind of media that the way it is today, if this guy would have came out today, it's like, you know, like everybody talks about like Clayton Kershaw and Justin Verlander, you know, like all these guys are just like totally like just he'd probably be more like a Greg Maddux, you know, because his control was there. He didn't have overpowering stuff, but his control was great. He knew how to flip and pitch a game. He was part of one of the best baseball dynasties that never was in the Oakland A's and never got his due. And I don't know if he's in the Hall of Fame, but by far, like, Dave Stew should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, because this guy, you know, you talk about that run he had with the A's, but then he went to Toronto and he won a flipping championship at Toronto after winning 20 games. You know, no drugs that we know of. I mean, clean as all hell with Dave Stewart.
You know, maybe one time solicited a transvestite prostitute. Maybe one time accidentally.
There's nothing.
But so did Eddie Murphy.
So soliciting, and so did. Who was that one dude that was dating that girl from Austin Powers, dude? Hugh Jackman. No. Hugh something.
Elizabeth Hurley and whatever the fuck's
name. All I know is Elizabeth Hurley in Austin Powers. That was like pretty close to being like a perfect, like...
Hey, if she was a tranny, she was the Mona Lisa of trannies.
If she was a tranny, I would get on my knees right now and pray to the almighty Elizabeth Hurley. And maybe I'd be like, oh!
You don't remember a 40-year-old virgin?
I remember a 40-year-old virgin. I remember.
That was a tranny. That was the Mona Lisa of trannies. So, you got a Hummer from the tranny, didn't you?
So this kind of degraded real fast. We're trying to give credit to one Bob Welsh from talking about transvestites. So, you know, much love to this guy. Put Dave Stewart in the hall. And Stu had one of the best forkballs I've ever seen in my life. And that's a pitch that nobody can throw anymore. But Stu at the time was throwing a crazy-ass forkball. And two-seamer as well.
And hacking hella mean and talking with that high voice.
Yes. I'm going to strike you out. It's kind of like...
Don't look at me, sucker.
Kind of like, what's her name? What's the chick with the Audi that that's going all crazy at every time she wrestles? Alicia Fox.
Get that camera out of my face.
So there we go. So we were talking about Daniel Bryan, and now I don't know what the hell we're going to talk about now. But you didn't watch all of Raw, but
no. Well, I thought it sounded like that after talking about Daniel Bryan. Then I think you wanted to talk about this upcoming Money in the Bank match. And, like, it sounds like you're kind of disappointed in the guys who have qualified so far. So, you know, what are the reservations you have about this match, or what are your concerns that's going into this thing?
There's nobody there that I want to watch. I mean, you know, and if you had asked me 3 months ago, I'd have been like, oh, this is tailor-made for Cesaro. Cesaro is, like, prime. He can, like, you know, he even though he's not going to win, you're really going to enjoy watching this guy wrestle. This whole Raw, dude, was every flipping single match that I saw during this Raw was a retread for the past 3 months. I've seen these guys wrestle each other so many times. And the problem I have with Cesaro right now is that everything that you liked about this guy, they took it away from him in the ring. I mean, like, this guy was, like, getting... After watching Sandow over the past 3 weeks or a month just, like, be buried by creative, and then you take a guy like Cesaro... And you don't do a swing anymore. That swing. It's not that so much that it's. I watched Cesaro for the swing, but he knew how to do it within the match. Where when he saw it, it's like, yeah, this is it. You know, like and the swing isn't even my favorite move that this guy does. I mean, I love his European uppercut. I love a ton of other things that he does. He doesn't stomp on the guy anymore. And it's just like you're taking everything away from this guy, and then you're going to turn around and say like, oh, this guy isn't getting over by the fans anymore.
Let me play devil's advocate just to see how you react. If they're trying to make him a heel and they keep cheering that Cesaro swing out of the building, which they did, then kind of like the thing with the Wyatts, right? They're trying to be heels, but you're giving them a little bit too much, like, fan favorite type stuff. Like, you think that could be the reason why they took the swing from him? And if it is, like, do you agree with it?
Everything you say, I agree with that. Yes and yes. But... Stone Cold didn't become Stone Cold because they wanted him to be somebody. The Rock didn't become The Rock because they wanted him to be somebody. They wanted The Rock to be a heel. The Rock was able to be a heel, and he did everything that he wanted to do. He wasn't stopped. He could say whatever the hell he wanted to say. He could do whatever he wanted to do in the ring, and he became a bigger star than a heel or a babyface. Same thing with Stone Cold. I mean, Stone Cold was like the heel number one. I mean, I remember watching Stone Cold when he was like a heel versus Bret Hart and going like, man, I'm like, this guy, I hate this flipping guy, but he can get it flipping done in the ring. And even like the whole thing, the infamous where he passes out, you know, from loss of blood versus the Hitman. And I was like, dude, like, this is such a flipping play on my emotions to try to like make me like this guy or whatever and stuff like that. But I remember I didn't have the pay-per-view, but I remember the Saturday, or the next week, because they used to have a Saturday show where they'd recap everything. It was called WWF Livewire, where people would call in, and you'd have Jim Ross, and I think you would have either, I think you had Doc Hendricks. So you had those two guys. That's how far I go back, dude. So for all these people that say, like, oh, hey, all these podcasters out here don't know what the hell they're talking about, I know what the flip I'm talking about, right? So Doc Hendricks, of course, was Michael P.S. Hayes, and... I remember that when that match happened and I saw it, I was like, I don't like Stone Cold. I don't like the whole $1 million champion. I don't like, you know, the ringmaster. He's a weak ass gimmick and now he's trying to be like a heel or whatever it is. But I remember after watching that match going like, okay, this guy has something and this is going to be his like calling card. And he took off. My whole thing is like, where's these calling cards now? You know, you have all these like things that are going on, and it just doesn't. It's like, let these guys grow and let them be who they are, and see what the hell happens. Like, you know what, Bray's having too much. He's having too much. Like, you know, people like him too much. So you're going to stop that. You know, Cesaro is like getting over way over, and he's hitting this gray area where he can make like a superstar. But let's stop that. And then at the same time, you have John Cena trying to get a rub off the flipping Shield and, like, just kind of piggyback on them and see what he can do. It's just, that's what I'm getting tired of. I'm getting really tired of this whole thing. And Raw is not something to watch anymore. It's retread. And all you're doing is you're going to watch the opening segment. and you're going to watch the main event. And that's what your three-hour show is. It shouldn't be that way. Did I answer your question?
So you're not happy.
I'm very unhappy. Yeah, the past, you can only have so many Seth Rollins turns before it really gets bored. And this whole thing that happened with Cena piggybacking off of the flipping shield, it doesn't make any sense. And it's just, you can tell that this guy is grasping at straws, and he's piggybacking off of everybody's legitimate, like, babyface heat that they have. He's trying to claim some fame off of it. And your top guy shouldn't do that. And up to, like, a month ago, I was, like, totally supporting John Cena, going, like, you know what? I hate the guy, but at least he's entertaining to watch now. And he's just, it's just like, now it's just like the same thing over and over again.
So why was he, what was he doing that was working 2 months ago?
He was losing. He was losing, and he was giving guys good matches. You know, I mean, he was, he did the job for Daniel Bryan. He was doing jobs for Bray Wyatt. He would win some, he would lose some. He lost for about 2-3 weeks straight.
I read this report from PW Mania, it's like one of those their house show reports. So I guess Cena got like an eye injury over the weekend, and then he was in a main event, which was Usos versus.
Was what did Vince McMahon's dick hit his eye or something like that when he was going down on him? Is that what he got the injury for?
Yeah, McMahon pulled out too quick and he busted a nut in the eye. It was a pop shot. So
a cheap pop.
Yeah, he got the cheap pop. No. Not with Cena. It's pretty expensive.
Jesse the Snake. John the Snake.
They had to close up and McMahon gave that face.
The Snake. John Cena.
And nobody even got that either. No, everybody listening right now, there's probably only like 5% of the people that actually got that. That was back when Jake the Snake would bring out Damien and throw it on someone's chest and he'd go, "Bruh!
Gives me the willies."
The Snake.
Okay, go ahead.
So, it was the main event was the six-man tag, the Wyatts against the Usos and Cena. So I guess basically the match was like the Usos wrestled the whole match and John Cena was just cheerleading on the side because he's hurt. So the last 30 seconds he came in, two shoulder blocks, the You Can't See Me and the AA on Bray Wyatt and got him the hell out of there. I mean, you talk about like stealing heat off someone else's momentum. I mean, it's a house show, so you know people aren't gonna really know about it. But I mean, that's the definition of it right there. That's exactly what he's been doing.
And to kind of steal PWI's fame, a la John Cena, Raw wasn't sold out this week. And it's just kind of this really kind of a lull that's going on with wrestling right now. And the problem that I have is that if you're going to strip Daniel Bryan of the belt, well, put some people in the match that you want to be a champion. Everybody that's in that match so far, you don't want to see him as a champion. And even the one guy you could say, like, Cesaro is the guy that you want to see as champion, but I don't want to see him as champion right now. You know, I don't like his character right now. I don't like his matches. And then who are going to be the remaining two guys? Maybe John Cena. Maybe who else do we not give a fuck about? That could be in the ladder match. I mean, who is it? I mean, it's like, are you going to put both members of the Shield in there? You know, you're going to put Dean Ambrose in there, or Roman Reigns, or maybe Batista shows up. I mean, it's just like, who cares, dude?
Could be Seth.
It could be Seth, but. Then who's the remaining? Do you think Seth is going to win the title when you have Randy Orton in there? It can make it interesting, but then what? But then you're pretty much like throwing your remote at the TV when Randy Orton wins. I mean, it's just I don't know. I don't get it, dude. I don't get it right now because you have three members of Evolution. Triple H is not in the wrestling picture. You don't have a fourth member there. And so if Randy Orton wins the title, is Seth Rollins going to win the Intercontinental Championship? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. If they had Batista in there and Batista was still wrestling and, say, Batista becomes the Intercontinental Champion, then you can have Triple H and Seth Rollins be the tag team champions. Maybe. Maybe then it's like kind of like, okay, the factions are back. But when you have a three-person faction and a two-person faction and that's your faction right now. And then you have the Wyatt family that is going to, whenever it faces John Cena, they're going to win some match that doesn't matter. The next pay-per-view, John Cena's going to win. Where am I at, dude?
Yeah, no, it's not going anywhere, and it's sad because, like, I mean, I've been advocating for, like, some kind of tournament recently and with a vacant title, and I think that it's a great opportunity to have a vacant title with this Money in the Bank match. I mean, I think that could be a great match with a lot of high stakes. It's set up well, but the people that they're putting in there, it makes zero sense. And yeah, that's where I disagree. I mean, like putting Orton in the match and not having him have to qualify, that makes sense to me. Yeah, that sounds like something they would do. Like,
yeah.
Someone from, like, and it could have been Seth. I think it would have been better if it was Seth. But, you know, it makes sense to me that Randy Orton would be the guy that they would just hand a spot. And I got no problem with that, like, story-wise. But, you know, I don't know who qualified yesterday. But all I know is for them to put...
It was Sheamus. Sheamus qualified yesterday.
Sheamus qualified.
And guess who he fought? And,
yeah.
And who did he fight?
Wade.
Yeah.
And I thought, now that you mentioned it, that's one of the... That's part of that I actually saw. I thought the match was actually really good, to be honest with you. But the result, you know, with the stakes that were at hand there, it doesn't make any sense. Barrett should be the guy. And then to go with the whole, like, reverse thing here, I mean, or to take it back a week, because basically, you know, there's one of the things that they feel like they have to do is, like, probably have an even amount of heels and faces in there, right? So last week they put Del Rio in, so that kind of tells you they're going to put a face this week, which is Sheamus. But you reverse it the other way. If you put Ziggler in there last week and then put Wade Barrett in there this week, that is two guys that people want to see.
Sheamus isn't even a face right now. He's not a face. He's not a heel. Nobody cares about him.
Wait, and not that no one cares about him, but Wade's the same. Wade's almost a baby face right now. Like, Wade's over big pretty much everywhere they go. And that's, I just don't understand. I mean, they could make him a baby face. He'd take off big.
So you're basically having all these guys that you should, like, Ziggler should be in there. Wade should be in there. This is, like, a perfect opportunity to kind of have, like, a guy that has kind of flirted with being a champion. Like, Dolph Ziggler has been, like, a world heavyweight champion. He's over with the fans like crazy. Everybody wants to see this guy succeed. And they're basically putting the old guard in there. And what's even worse is that you have Sheamus as a double champion. Not going to work. Alberto Del Rio, not going to work. Just because you know the guy's gone. He, you know, his contract's up, he's going to be gone. And then who do you have left? You have Randy Orton. Randy Orton can work if you have, like, a legitimate evolution. And this would be, like, a perfect opportunity to have, like, Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose all fighting for this championship, along with the Ziggler, along with, like, I'm okay with Sheamus being in there, along with the Randy Orton. But I mean, what happens after this? I mean, what happens after, you know, you get some guy that you don't care that's champion? What the hell happens after this? I mean, you take away everything that Rollins has done, like, you know, the heat that he's gotten by joining the Evolution. It's pretty much done. It's pretty much gone already.
I would think so.
Far from it.
No, I would think so. Because then all of a sudden, no one's... If he's now playing second fiddle to Randy Orton, who's the champion in Evolution... What is Seth Rollins going to do? So it doesn't make any sense momentum-wise. I mean, I would assume that Randy Orton... Well, the way it looks right now, Randy Orton's going to win the belt. But just to me, if you want to make him win the belt, then fine. But why don't you then put him in the match with six guys that people want to see that can actually put on a good show? Because there's no really appreciable difference between, say, like, if you beat Alberto Del Rio as opposed to Dolph Ziggler, it's not like, oh, you've beaten, like, you know, you're going to get any greater rub off of Del Rio than you would of Ziggler.
And the whole thing is, you can't even say that right now because Dolph Ziggler has lost every flip match that he's ever been in. It doesn't matter whether he loses or not.
Right. It doesn't matter if he loses. And then the other thing is, if you put him in the matches, like I said, there's no added cachet by putting... Del Rio in there over Ziggler, or by putting Sheamus in there over Wade. So, you know, why not put some guys in there that can actually put on a good match? In fact, Wade Barrett and Randy Orton have a really good history of some pretty physical matches. And they haven't touched upon that. They haven't done it since Bear's been injured, and that's fine because you know it was kind of getting stale. But if you reintroduce like that in the match, like you know that would be pretty. That would be something that's actually compelling.
Okay, so I'm going to test you right now. Then I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Which I think you'll succeed with flying colors.
Oh, thanks.
So what guy should be in the Money in the Bank? And if Randy Orton wins, are you okay with that?
So we're excluding the guys that have already been eliminated?
You can put whoever... You can No.
Just any...
Who in the WWE universe that makes it so great because you can cheer or boo them at the same time, whatever you want to do, and then I can show you my shitty-ass towel and run into the ring and like, can't even dive into the ring and dive up off your flipping hip. Anybody in the WWE universe, who do you want to see in this match?
All right, I'd go... And it's, what, six?
I believe I am so invested in this match that I don't even know how many numbers. Let's say six.
All right. Bray. Reigns. Rollins. Wade.
Randy Orton has to be in there.
Dolph and Orton.
Yeah. I'd much rather see that. I mean, the whole thing is Bray can still be in there. But you know John Cena's going to be in there. So that leaves like... And then if John Cena's in there, then Bray will probably be in there too. And those guys will cancel each other out. And then you just have like a bunch of guys that you really don't care about. And the sad thing is that Sheamus is a guy that you should really care about. But they've kind of... Ever since he's come back, they haven't played him well. They put the Intercontinental belt on him, but...
U.S.
Whatever... My point exactly. You know? My point exactly with that. But they faced him off against the flipping Intercontinental Champion for the past 5 weeks, and he's beaten Wade Barrett every single time. It doesn't make any sense to me, dude.
We've been liking Wade Barrett for a while, and he's finally got this character that people get behind. And I think he's got all the tools. He's good on the mic. He's good in the ring. You can legitimately believe this guy can fight.
Can he be a world heavyweight champion?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay.
But every time you think that he's going to get a push and they start, like, moving him in the direction where you... Yeah. Then they squash him.
They squash him. Yeah.
And you know, not to make light of things, but... Okay. I already know how I feel, but let me ask you if this affects your viewing on anything. Does the fact that... Legitimately, Sheamus got his ass kicked by Yoshitatsu and Sin Cara. Does that make you view him any different when you see him in the ring?
I wasn't around when he lost to Yoshitatsu. I wasn't around.
It doesn't matter if you're around. Just the fact that you know that in real life, both of those guys kicked his ass.
No, what bothers me about Sheamus is that he had a good character going, for better or for worse, when they had him on SmackDown. They had John Cena on Raw. I could get behind Sheamus being the world champion on SmackDown. I could get behind that because he had some great matches with Big Show. He's had some great matches with Cesaro. He's had some great matches with Wade Barrett. And now he's just like a caricature of his former self. I mean, he's coming out with a flipping fella shirt. And he says fella every chance he can get. I mean, he's a mockery. It's funny, like when he came out for the Royal Rumble and he comes walking out, and we're sitting there, you know, you're with your sons, I'm with my daughters, and he comes out, and I'm just saying fella the whole time, as a joke, you know, fella, fella. Well, lo and behold, that's all he does now. He is a shadow of his former self with the way creative is using him. And I think I have more of a problem with creative than I do with Sheamus himself. I like Sheamus. I think Sheamus can put on good matches, but they don't allow him to put on good matches, and he's a one-trick pony with his bro kick. And he doesn't have to be. The guy, when he came out and he beat John Cena for like, you know, for the title, and he was like the heavyweight champion for Raw when NXT was in its prime, and he was kind of doing that whole thing, he was very interesting to watch. When he was legitimate, he's very interesting to watch. But now that he's like a cartoon character, it's like if Sheamus now was back when he was a part of Rock and Roll Wrestling, you know, the cartoon that they had of WWF superstars with Hulk Hogan, Junkyard Dog, Big John Studd, blah, 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 blah. He would be great. But that era is over. Even though they want to get back to the era is done with. I just don't, I don't get what WWE is doing right now. It's like TNA has fallen by the wayside. ROH is ROH. You know, they allow TNA to use their talent and stuff, and they're blah, 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 and Tommy Dreamer this, Tommy Dreamer that, talking bad about Dixie and Bubba Ray, whatever it is. You don't have any competition. You are, your stock prices have gone down. So you're just going to do more of the same, and not only are you going to do more of the same, but what made you, what put you to that point where you could launch WWE Network, because you're doing things right. You know, you had a bunch of young stars that you were taking care of and, like, having people want to come back every week to watch them. Now it's like, why am I watching Raw now? Why am I watching WWE? Why am I watching it? Because all the guys that I like, Sheamus included, are shadows of the former selves. You know, you have, like, you have, you know, Roman Reigns is protected. Ambrose is kind of, Ambrose has kind of come, we were, last week we were talking, like, was Ambrose going to fall by the wayside? I felt that Ambrose, what Ambrose is doing right now, you know, with this whole thing, I thought he's come out better for what's happened with Rollins. And pretty much, like, the only guy that you really care about, or the storylines you only care about, is Rollins and Ambrose and The Shield. But you're not putting those guys, you're not putting them in any match that's worthwhile. And if you do, who do you bring in? You know, it's like, I'm coming into Raw, and they have this mystery partner, right? And here's the whole thing. So the second that I found out it was John Cena was going to be the third partner, I was like, okay. I fell asleep last night, right? So I had this flipping peacock that's in my flipping backyard, and my dumbass flipping neighbor across the street feeds that goddamn peacock, and that peacock decides to have his presence known at 4 o'clock in the flipping morning. And then he really starts starts getting his groove at 6 o'clock. The peacock gets his groove back at 6 in the flipping morning. I wake up at 6 in the morning every flipping night to this goddamn-ass peacock, right? So I was like, well, okay. So 6 o'clock runs around. This peacock wakes me up. It's like 6:30, 6:45. I can't go back to sleep. I was like, well, okay, I'll finish Raw. Well, guess what happened? I put on Raw at 6:45. I fall asleep within 20 minutes of flipping Raw because I fall asleep again. I have to force myself to wake up and watch Raw again. I fell asleep during Raw twice because of John Cena. If you can bring like a third guy that I'm actually going to care about into that match, and it was just, you know, he comes in, he steals Daniel Bryan's thunder with the whole flipping neck injury. He comes out and faces Stephanie McMahon, botches that segment. Then you have Dr. Maroon, and there's a spine book, the spine book right behind the guy, and he's talking about it. It's like, is that Jack Tunney?
Like the skeleton of the spine laying on the bookshelf, too.
Yeah, I mean, give me a flipping break, dude. I fell asleep during both those flipping matches. I fell asleep twice during the main event. And the only match first of all, I didn't watch one match last Raw this Monday. I fast-forwarded everything. The only match, guess what? It's the only match I watched in its entirety.
Bo Dallas?
No, I was getting tired of Bo Dallas because I don't like his flipping finisher. So since I've seen him and him face Kofi Kingston or Sin Cara for the past 4 or 5 weeks, it's like, okay, this is boring now. Guess what? What's the one match? What, think about it for a second.
A Divas match?
There you go. It was Paige versus Vivica Fox. You like that? No, I know it's not. But Alicia Fox. And then, of course, my girl was in there. And she didn't look too good. She looked kind of plastic today. Or yesterday. Well,
today, as compared to the other time.
And granted, I watched this match in the morning. But Paige is the only person that I'll watch. Because she's nice to look at. You know, that's pretty much it. And I didn't care about the main event because I knew exactly what was going to happen. I knew John Cena and The Shield was going to beat the Wyatt family, even though they shouldn't. It's just, you know, they do three-man tags very well. But when I see the same three-man tag match every flipping week, whether it's The Shield versus three guys or the Brays or the Wyatt families versus three guys, I just do not care anymore. And I don't want this to be a negative show, you know, like screw the WWE. But what the hell? As a fan, so let me put you on the spot. As a fan, why should I keep on watching WWE of wrestling in general?
I mean, really, all you got right now is hope, right? Hope that they're going to turn the product around and make it a little bit better.
But how? Because you have this Money in the Bank match.
That's why it's hope. I mean,
and then what the hell? Why do you have a Money in the Bank match at all? Because if they win the Money in the Bank match, they don't have the money in the bank, they have the title instead.
Well, I'm fine with that, though, because I think giving the money in the bank a year off is not the worst thing, because they kind of, and that's only because they've screwed with it and they've devalued the money in the bank so much with over the last couple of years anyway, that I actually don't have a problem with them just making this for the title and then, like, you know, sit out a year without money in the bank, so then next year they can bring it back and have it be relevant. That I don't have a problem with, but it's just hope that, you know, they'll get their head out of their ass and figure out how to make some interesting television and some interesting matches and push some people that people want to see. Like, they think it's the death knell that people want to see them. Oh, we can't push those guys. It's just dumb. And, you know, I think they're starting to get a little bit of the backlash with it financially. I mean, it's starting to show, and I think at some point they might need to figure it out. But they got, you know, they can't just only push the guys that they want. You know, I don't want to be listen to the fan internet guy, because I think there is definitely some merit to their whole idea of we know better than the fans do in certain cases. Not just giving the fans what they want all the time is the best way to go. I would agree with that. But there are certain times where the evidence becomes overwhelming that you gotta give the people what they want to see, because the fans are actually right on this one. And Dolph Ziggler is one of these cases. Like, the fans are right to cheer this guy. Cesaro, like, whether you want to make him a heel or a face, the fans are right. They have gravitated to the right guy that puts on good matches, that cuts good promos, that's entertaining in the ring, that, you know, whether you like him or you don't like him, you know, you enjoy watching. You know, the fans are kind of like picking the right guys in some cases here.
With Daniel Bryan as well.
Yeah, but they're going to the old, like, well, if everyone's going that way, we're going to go the opposite way. And, you know, in a lot of cases, that's the way to do it. But you can't, that can't be your entire business plan. Sometimes the people are right. And I think they need to wake up and realize. I thought they figured it out with Daniel Bryan, but then they just turn around and proceed to put him in crap matches just to prove that they were right again. So the one thing that I think, and this is kind of funny, because last week we kind of posed a question and didn't answer it, but we discussed the idea of a third member for the Shield. And sadly, I think I saw something on, like, WWE website. Like, it was through Twitter. I think it was a link to their website saying, you know, who do you think should be the third member of the Shield? Which I didn't even go for the bait, but I was just kind of pissed that they were asking the question, because we were talking about how dumb it would sound. But some fan posed the question, or threw the idea out, that Ronda Rousey should be the third member. Did you see that?
Who the hell is Ronda Rousey?
You don't know. Ronda Rousey. She's like the best female MMA...
Oh, okay. Yeah,
the one that
yeah.
Punk's always tweeting back and forth with.
Yeah,
she's got the ridiculous armbar. So, but she's a wrestling fan too, and so someone threw out there that why don't you make Rousey the third member of the Shield? And then Roman Reigns tweeted that he's got a riot gear and a vest for her if she wants it. And then she kind of like fangirled on him a little bit, but like that would actually, as crazy and as dumb as some of these like celebrity bring-ins that they do. I actually think that was actually
legitimate.
And then there was a kind of rumor on there that WWE was like trying to get her to actually do an appearance for SummerSlam. So I don't know if this is all coming together or what, but I actually think that would work. Like,
now is Ronda Rousey, is she the pretty one?
Yeah, she's the one that was on Rome talking about
she's
fucking
a good
houseboats.
Interview.
Yeah,
yeah, and she was the one that was talking trash about her opponent. Right?
Yeah. Now she can talk.
Yeah,
she's good.
So everything you just talked about, Ronda Rousey aside, the other problem that I see, and we touched about on this a little bit, at least I did a little bit, was that the one-on-one match with WWE is pretty much non-existent now. They've done such a good job with tag teams and triple threat or triple tag team matches that the single matches have pretty much gone by the wayside. I have not seen a good single match since Seth Rollins versus Daniel Bryan or Seth Rollins versus CM Punk, whoever it was. They have lost the art form of the singles match.
I don't know. I saw a great singles match on SmackDown.
Which was what?
Rollins Ziggler.
Yeah, but yeah, you can throw that out. But the whole thing is that you know Dolph is going to lose.
That doesn't mean the match isn't good.
It is for me. It's like if there's no if I know there's no chance
in hell
Dolph Ziggler's gonna win, who cares? I mean you can legitimately sit there, right? I'm not taking anything away from you as a wrestling fan saying that you enjoyed Rollins versus Ziggler. I do not enjoy any Ziggler's match whatsoever because I know the guy's going to lose every single time. There's no drama for me. This guy, you know what it's pretty much becoming? It's becoming like Barry Horowitz, dude. If Ziggler finally wins a singles match, he's going to become the next Barry Horowitz because he's, you know, he can pat himself on the back and have the shirt with the big old hand on the back of the shirt because the guy does not win. He's a flipping Dolph Ziggler is a jobber. That's all he is now. He is the new George South of WWE. The guy never wins.
Yeah, and?
That's a flipping problem.
Well, okay, here's where it's a problem. It's a problem when he's losing to guys that he should be beating. Okay, but if he loses to Seth Rollins, I got no problem with that.
I have no problem with that. And but he loses to guys that he should be beating.
I know that. But
so where's the legitimacy with this guy?
Well, I mean, the legitimacy is if you're watching wrestling and
he gets a paycheck and you know that he's getting paid, good for him. I'm proud of him. Good job.
You know, you're holding against him something he has no control.
I'm not holding anything against him.
Well, his matches are good.
His matches are great.
So then you can't say that they.
But how am I going to be emotionally invested in a match when I know he's going to lose every single time?
I didn't say you had to be emotionally invested.
Then it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I'm sorry. It does not work. There's no reason for me to watch a match when I already know what the outcome is going to be. And with Dolph Ziggler...
It's wrestling, dude. You pretty much know what the outcome of every match is going to be.
Then I want to be surprised. I want to be over, I want to be over flipping well.
You knew the Shield was going to win in their six-man against Evolution.
Did I come over to your house to watch it?
No. You made a mistake.
I made a mistake. Did I come over to your house
to... You would have if you could have.
I would have if I could have, but I'd rather make money than watch a match I already know I'm going to watch. And that's the whole key right there. Okay? Because Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant.
You watch Punk versus Undertaker.
Because there was a glimmer of hope that he could win because they protected him leading up to that match. He was cutting such good promos. They gave this guy flipping mic time. They gave him flipping segment time.
I think we all knew how that match was going to
go. There was a small sliver of hope that CM Punk would win. And the whole thing was that CM Punk came out better in that match against The Undertaker. Ziggler does not come out better from any match that he loses because he loses all the time. It's like I'm watching a match and I'm angry the whole match. I'm mad the whole match because I know the guy's not going to win. And even though he can do all these great spots, this and this, I know he's not going to win. Tuesday night's main event that was on WWE Network, right? He faces Seth Rollins, right? Am I going to watch that match? No. Why? Because I know he's going to lose. And maybe that's the one match that I will watch, but the SmackDown match didn't do anything for me. Because I knew he was going to lose. And the guy, you know, if you put him against flipping Sin Cara, Sin Cara will win that match.
All right, well,
if you put him against El Torito, El Torito will win that match.
All right, well, let's go this way then. Are you saying that the WWE singles matches suck because the performers are not good in them? Or are you saying they suck because they're too predictable?
I'm saying neither. I'm saying that it's not so much that I think the performers are good in them. I'll give the performers credit. But I've seen two things. Either it's a Dolph Ziggler match where I know that the guy that
is... No, I'm not talking about Dolphin.
I'm trying to generalize it. So it's either a Dolph Ziggler match where you know what the outcome is going to be, so there's no emotional investment in it, or I've seen the same match for the past 3 months and I do not care anymore. They have not put anybody like... And you can go down the line, dude. You can go like Kofi Kingston, right? Like Kofi Kingston's a jobber. Kofi Kingston can put on a good match with someone, but who do they put him with? They put him with a guy like Bo Dallas, right? Or they put him with, say, you know, they want to give Sin Cara a mini run, and they're going to put him against Sin Cara. The only thing I like about Sin Cara matches is that they don't have those fucking lights anymore, right? So those are the two things. Either you know the guy's going to lose, or you've seen the same match for the past 3-4 months. Like, switch it up, right? Like, Big E Langston versus Rusev, right? That has all the makings of a great rivalry. But why isn't it? because Rusev is going to win all the time. Big E can't win ever. Like, let Rusev lose. If you want to build a guy up, you can build a guy up. You can build a guy up like Rusev up. You can have him lose a couple times, and then you can have him win the majority of the time. You know, have him win 75% of the time. But that one match where he loses, and the next week there's a rematch, I'm going to watch that match. But you already know who's going to win. You already know who's, you know, it's like, yeah, it is wrestling. You know everything's predetermined. We can pretty much sit here and go, you know, here's the thing. When during the 80s, when it was guys, you know, like, say, Don The Rock versus Dino Bravo, right? You could say, you know, you'd say like 50% of the time Dino Bravo would win, 50% of the time Don The Rock would win. But it was 50%. So the next match, you didn't know what the hell is going to happen. Yeah. When you have like a 90, when the guy, if it's a two-man rivalry and 99.9% of the time the guy's going to win, I'll watch. And even like, you know, this whole thing when they had John Cena versus Bray Wyatt, right? Bray won the first one. John Cena won the next one. Bray would win the second one. John Cena. I don't have a problem with that. The problem that I have is like, okay, where is this story going? Why are you putting John Cena in with Bray Wyatt? What's going to be the end result? And now they've kind of just killed that whole thing. There's like, anybody that goes against John Cena is in a holding pattern, right? Bray was getting a crazy run, right? Not just by WWE, but by the fans as well. The fans in the arena, by IWC on Twitter, this guy was like just going crazy. Like everybody was liking this guy. He has been dead in the water since he's faced John Cena. Nothing has ever changed with him winning or losing. Like when he beat John Cena, it's like, yeah. But how did he beat John Cena? He had two guys interfere in a flipping steel cage match, right? And then he had some kid that was in some flipping commercial saying he has the whole world in his hands in a really like crazy creepy voice, and I'm supposed to like bust a nut over that? I mean, give me a break, dude. You know, that's the problem that I have. It's getting to the point where there's no singles matches whatsoever, and now the tag team matches and the triple threat matches are starting to lose their steam as well.
Because you've seen them too much or because they're predictable?
Both. You know, it's like, you know, you take away, because you take away, you have two really good three-man tag matches, right? You have Bray Wyatt, the Wyatt family versus three guys, and then you have the Shield versus three guys. Well, you take away one of those guys, and now the Shield's gone. Who do you have left? You have Bray Wyatt. And please help me with this. Who is Bray Wyatt involved with? Who is he fighting against right now?
John Cena.
And what happens when you fight against John Cena? You're in a flipping holding pattern. So nothing is going anywhere right now with the WWE Universe. And you can cheer it, or you can boo it, but that's what makes the WWE Universe so great. Fuck you, dude. I mean, I'm tired of it.
Well, whether you like it or you love it, you got to learn to live with it.
Yeah. Where's that guy at, you know? So, you know,
you don't even want him back either.
So, I mean, that's...
I like your shirt, by the way.
Oh, thank you. HIC shirt. I like your coach shirt, too. You know, nice. I think it's the third or fourth time, but you know
if it's free, it's me.
It's free, it's me, yeah. This was free, too, so there we go.
There you go.
It shows the belly a little bit, but whatever it is. So,
got to rock the boiler.
So, if there's anything else, and there's nothing really... I don't know if there's anything really noteworthy that we need to talk about right now.
No, I think we can get into the segments now.
Okay. And I'm sorry if this is the way... Here's the thing. I was very excited to talk to you about wrestling. You know, like, I was really looking forward to doing this podcast, and I enjoy talking about wrestling. I still enjoy wrestling, but it's like, you can do better, dude. You can do better. You know, there's... No.
Nah.
Yeah, you could. If you're a creative, yeah, you could do a whole lot better. Yeah. Yeah. You know, mix it up. I mean, I'm starting to pine for flipping...
Russo, for
Big Johnny over here, dude. You know, I want Big Johnny to come back. I miss that guy. So, I saw Vicky Guerrero on Raw, and I was like, pretty much like doing cartwheels, dude. I was like skipping all around my house because finally you could get someone that you can get like legitimate heat with, you know. So,
Brad Maddox and the Shield.
There we go. Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. Brad Maddox and the Shield. Yeah.
All right. I got somebody.
I got somebody too.
I was
going to do Dealer's Choice today.
Yeah.
So this is your pick. Monday, I made about $150 in tips, working 4 hours, flipping great. Today, I made another $100. So I made $250 in 2 days, working as a bartender during the day. And I have three night shifts in the kind of the WWE of my restaurant. in Los Gatos, so I'm looking pretty good right now. But I have, so the whole reason I bring this because it's kind of like the bartender's choice or the dealer's choice. I kind of have a couple guys, dude, and I know one of them you're probably not, you won't say because you really don't know about him. But the first guy that I'm thinking of is Terry Bam Bam Gordy. The other people I'm thinking of inducting in is gonna be.
Why are you putting all these names out there? Don't you need to just pick one?
No. You're gonna pick. You're the dealer. You have the heavyweight championship right now, and you're going, this is the dealer. This is the dealer. So we have Terry Bam Bam Gordy. We have the Brood, and we have Hardcore Harley. Now, if you think one of your guys is better than those three guys, then you can throw in a wild card and override all three of those guys.
I'm gonna try to throw my card in here.
No, you're the dealer, yeah, dude. So whatever you want to do. So you're not going to try to do anything. You're going to override.
I'm going to override.
Okay. But those are three good guys, right?
I'm not some huge fan of Hardcore Holly, though. I respect him.
Okay.
The Brood, Gangrel doesn't do anything for me.
The entrance, though, dude. The
entrance was good. And the song was good. Yeah. That's about it. And I use it for the dungeon in the video game. I think Gordy is the most deserving of those three, but I don't know a whole lot about the guy. But I think I can override here.
You can, because you're the dealer. You got the championship belt right now. You're Ric Flair, and your eyes are all bugged out, and Jim Ross is holding the microphone to your face, and you have the title up there, and you're saying, this is the dealer. This is the dealer. So you're the dealer right now, dude. Get that camera out of my face.
I'm just going to start with the... Hello, ladies.
You're going to put Val Venus in there?
I'm going to put Val Venus in there.
Okay.
Dude, I thought Val had a pretty good run early on. I thought for the time, that was a really good character and he played it well. Obviously, jumped the shark with the whole Kai and Tai situation with him allegedly getting chopped off.
I don't think so at all. I think that's what puts him in there, yeah.
Okay, well, I just thought the thing was... I liked the whole thing when he was going after Shamrock's sister or whatever. I thought that was pretty funny. He had one of the better Titantrons of all time.
Yes.
With him popping out of the bushes.
With the
army helmet on. And the train coming through the tunnel. And some machine screw that kept going in and out of whatever that was doing. I mean, I just thought the whole thing worked. Never get away with it in today's WWE. But the thing was, like, he was a pretty solid worker. He was nothing spectacular, but I thought he was a pretty solid worker, and I thought that he did the best he could do with the kind of funny character. I thought it was pretty good. He was entertaining. I think he went to about the heights he should have. He was another. It's funny because we're talking about D'Lo as this good European champion. I think Val was probably one of the other guys that probably made the most out of European championship runs. And, I think he was a good worker, a good mid-card guy for the time. I thought he was pretty solid, man.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I have no problem with Val Venus being in there. It's funny. I'm going to bring the producer into this, but I was involved with a really bad relationship. I wasn't getting laid. And there's plenty of girls that wanted to lay me in my flipping prime when I was like 22, 23 years old. Like, I mean, you're talking about like Murderer's Row of like hot chicks that wanted me, right?
Are we talking about the Korean or the Swede?
The Korean.
Okay.
No, the Swede was, I mean, that's a whole different story. But anyways, so basically like the happiest, so I was working about 40 hours a week. I was a full-time student. You were in fucking San Luis Obispo having a fucking ball. And say it. I had a ball. And you were gone, so my brother wasn't there. You know, like my brother from another mother wasn't there, but my real brother was there. So basically what happened was Monday, I would get Mondays off. And this is after working like 40 hours a week, like 3 to 12 is being a fucking bagger. And if you work 3 to 12 as a bagger, that's like hell on earth. And then, so that was the weekend. And then on Tuesday, I'd come around and work 6 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. That was hell because I was around the managers all the time. And I would still have to, like, I was in all these honors English classes and stuff, so I would wake up when I have my 3 to 12 shifts, and I would write like a 6-page essay every single time. Like, and this is back before you had like computers, right? Like personal computers. So I'd have to handwrite that shit. And so Mondays would come around. I'd wake up probably around 7 o'clock in the morning to beat traffic, because not only that, I'd wake up at 6:30 in the morning to beat traffic, because to get from San Jose to Fremont, it's only about 15 miles, but it'd take you like 2 hours just to get there if you didn't like beat the traffic. That's what living in the Bay Area is all about, right? Like, especially back then during the whole dot-com boom. And I would get there, and we'd play a Nintendo 64, and we'd play GoldenEye. We'd play this other one called, like, Wave Race 64, and we'd play Star Fox, which... You were the man in Star Fox. You were the master in Star Fox.
Star Fox 64.
So we would play. So we
fucking kings, man.
You were the king, dude. I have to give you that. And I thought I was pretty good at Star Fox, but you were on the whole different level. So so we would play that for probably about 9-10 hours straight. We would have like these barbecue beef hot pockets, and we just eat those all day long. And then wrestling would roll around, and we'd just watch wrestling from like 6 to 9, and then I would be dead to the world at like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. I leave there around like 11 o'clock and drive home to my shitty ass girlfriend that, you know, I never got laid with and stuff or anything like that. But Val Venus was a big part of that, and I remember he had these nice vignettes about him being a porn star and stuff. Like, what the hell? Like, I remember, like, I was so naive back then. I was like, what's a money shot? I'm like, what the hell is that? You know? So I remember his first his debut match, and that guy was nervous as all hell. I mean, he was like shaking, walking down the ramp. And back then they still have a ramp now, but they would really pan into that whole camera angle of him walking down there. The guy was flipping, shaking off his ass. Had a decent debut match, and then you kind of throw in the whole thing with Kai and Tai. And I was really big into Asian women back then, especially being a beggar. When San Jose was starting to shift to be like more Asian, there'd be some like butt-ass ugly Asian chicks. But when you're working 8 hours at a flipping grocery store, any girl looks good, right? And so there's like this really like one hot bagger. Like, I really liked her and stuff, but I kind of like, you know, she'd be bagging and like we'd be bagging. Like, I'd be in one.
You were bagging it?
I wish I was. I could have, but I never did because I was stupid back then. But but we had a, you know, we had one check. I'd be at one check stand. She'd be at the next check stand. I'd be bagging, and then when we were done, you know, I'd kind of, like, check her ass out. I'm like, hey. I'd, like, call him, hey. And I'd, like, look at her ass and stuff and everything, and she just, like, kind of shake her head. I mean, she was cool. But there'd be, like, some Asian chick I'd be, like, bagging for, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah, check that one. She's like, man, she's fucking ugly. I'm like, hey, even the ugly ones, dude. So I don't even know what tangent that's on.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know what that had to do with Al.
But, yeah, well, we're getting there. Okay, because the wife of the Kai and Tai manager, She was pretty hot. I mean, she wasn't overwhelmingly hot, but she was like ugly hot, you know. So I remember like he was like laying in bed talking.
Hot, is that like Triple H's skinny fat ass?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So he's laying in bed, and he's talking to the Kai and Tai guy or whatever. It's over the Titantron, back when they had a Titantron, and then all of a sudden he stops like kind of mid-sentence. He's like, "Have you found my keys yet?" And so like she comes out of the flipping blankets, right? So pretty much like, he was getting head, you know, like while he was talking to
head
him.
Head in the whip and not crashing it.
Pretty much. And nobody would get that either. Head in the whip, not. Whip, what? Whip equals.
Auto.
Nice and smooth. Ain't a damn thing changed. So they had that whole thing, and then this led to the infamous I chopped your pee pee or whatever. So they ganged up on Val Venus, and it was the main event. So they ganged up on Val Venus. And they carried him off into the backstage, and they pretty much tied him up, and he was like buck naked. And the Kai and Tai guy had a sword.
Samurai sword,
and he's going to chop him off, and they ended it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what happened to Bobby? And so the next Monday, they show that Undertaker saved him, or whatever it was. So whatever it was, but that was a great segment. And just for that segment alone, he's in. Because the best thing about that segment was they didn't show you that Undertaker saved him. So he's the opening segment of the next week, and he comes walking in, and he's like,
he's all like yeah, hobbling and
he's
stuff.
He's
right?
Over. He's wearing like a medical like
diaper
something. Yeah, like he's wearing like the medical smock and stuff and everything. And so he gets the mic and he goes, "Hello, ladies." And then he kind of comes back and says,
"You know, the big
Valbus." Yeah, the big Valbus is back and stuff. So just for that alone, he's in, dude. So yeah, and that's pretty much it. We really can't talk about, like, he wasn't.
Well, I would. he was, and he kind of came up in his early years with Edge and Christian, which I thought is like kind of interesting too. That the path that they all took and how they got there. But yeah, he was like he was part of their early days in Canada. And
with Rhino.
Yeah, and Rhino, and I think he was there when their that story that they tell where like they had to drive like in some blizzard and like fucking drove onto a pond and stuff like that, right? I think he was in that band too.
So. And so like what they said, like when they got stuck, he was like, "Hello, ladies."
The big Valbosi's gonna get out and push.
And I don't even need my hands. So yeah. Let's just end it with there. So he's in the Hall of Kayfabe. Golden Stick, you got one?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, you did your homework today. Okay.
Not really, just think about it on the way over.
All right. That it. You did your homework.
Though. I'm gonna give a Golden Stick to the Iron Sheik. And not for any of his, like, shoot interview tirades, which are awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I want to intervene real fast. Okay. So.
You want to give it to him for the shoot interview tirade?
No. I'm not going to. I want to discuss this other guy on Twitter. And I don't know if you've come across him or not yet, but his name is one. And I'm actually like, it's kind of like, you know, if a guy goes on a shooting rampage and they show his videos and stuff, you're giving him more power and giving this guy like kind of, it kind of happened this a couple weeks ago with that one guy about, he was like a woman hater and stuff and everything. And my wife got really pissed off. They're like, dude, they shouldn't show this video because everything that he wanted to happen, they're doing it. But this guy's name, I don't know if you come across guys, but his name is Wasim Pervez. And if you never come across this guy on Twitter, count yourself lucky.
I think I did. Is he like a total, like he like follows Cena and he like just tweets all this stuff about Cena and Orton. And
so basically what this guy does is like, I followed him for a New York Minute, right? And I was talking about Raw and he retweeted something. And this is back when I needed followers. So I take full responsibility for this. But he's like, he responded back to me. He's like, oh yeah. He's all, that's a great point. He's like, cool, follow me. And I was like, well, you first. So he follows me, so I follow him. And basically, like, I got, like, about 3 or 4 followers today. You know, like, there's like, 2 girls that like the Shield and stuff. And it was fun. It was nice talking to him and stuff. And kind of, she was talking about, like, Seth Rollins and NXT and how, like, you know, she really liked him in NXT and he should come out to the entrance. So I was like, well, as long as he doesn't do that crazy-ass stance that he did when he first, like, debuted. Because it's, like, a crazy, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's a crazy-ass stance. But it's good to talk to fans that, like, watch NXT and actually, like, yeah, like the Shield fangirls. And then you have the Shield fangirls that, like, pretty much do their homework and, like, truly like, you know, everybody in the Shield. And so it's that's when Twitter's good. But this guy is just like a straight mark. So basically, like, he'll say something, and it's just so vanilla with what he says. He's like, you know, like, you know, Seth Rollins has the opportunity to be one of the best ever. You know, and he'll put, like, Seth Rollins in there to try to get, like, somebody to respond to him. And he'll, like, just random, like, say, like, Jericho will, like, say, like, oh, hey, I'm in Germany doing a show with Fozzy. And then he'll reply and go, like, thoughts on your match with CM Punk in 2012 in the WrestleMania, whatever it is? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny because some of my other followers were, like, you know, like, they're, like, dude, we should, like, have, like, do a t-shirt called, like, Cool Follow Me or something like that. And so basically, like, this guy, he tried to go the Iron Sheik route and say really, like, outlandish stuff to get, like, some controversy, right? So he was sending out these tweets going, like, with, he was tagging Vince McMahon, at Vince McMahon, whatever it is, and going, like, oh, yeah, me and at Vince McMahon are, you know, working on the script for this Raw for you fans. So he was trying to say that he was part of WWE Creative. And everybody was just, like, lambasting this guy, going, like, dude, like, fuck you. So basically, like, he was taking a screenshot of, like, saying, like, him being in Stamford, Connecticut. So he's taking, like, say, like, McMahon. Like, McMahon does a tweet and says Stamford, Connecticut, right? Mm-hmm. Well, he was taking a screenshot of that, photoshopping, putting his face on top so to say that he's in Stamford, Connecticut. And he's from, like, flipping Coventry, England or something. So just, like, just like a total, like, everything that's bad about Twitter, this guy.
He's a troll.
There you go. Very nice. He's a troll. He's a super troll. And so I just, it's, he's very entertaining to just to kind of like, I like, I don't follow him anymore. Like, I quit following him and he quit following me. So basically what he does is like, he'll follow someone and like, if someone has a conversation, he's like, well, if you don't follow me, you're blocked. It's like, yeah, that's great. Like, and bye. This hurts me how?
Well,
yeah.
Bye.
Block me. Block me. I've already been blocked. Blocked. I've already been blocked. So that's, I just wanted to kind of bring that out there. It's just a, you know, if you want to have a good guffaw, like, just don't follow this guy because he's...
Don't give him the satisfaction.
He, first of all, he's a Pollyanna. He's a flipping troll. And he's just everything that's bad about Twitter, that's him. And the guy has like 8,000 followers. And here I am. My poor man over here has like 50-some-odd followers.
I think I'm up to 54.
There you go. So you're up to 50. But you should have like 8,000 followers, right? Or you should have at least like, you know, a good following. But nobody, you know, but you don't, nobody follows you. Whether I don't mean that in a bad way, you know, like in one night,
I gotta go now.
In one night, I squashed you. In one night, I squashed you. This guy, my best friend.
I haven't found my Twitter voice yet.
So go ahead, Iron Sheik. And so, this is gonna be the 22-inch neck, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. So it was, and it seems like a lot of our moments go back to WrestleMania 3, but this was pretty good. They had this like
the best WrestleMania ever.
The day before, it was like some empty arena interview with Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov.
Yeah.
And it's like the first time I really remember like hearing the Sheik speak for like an extended period of time. So I don't even. They asked him some question. He didn't even answer the question, but he just goes into his little promo, which was
do it.
He goes, this is the 22-inch neck and the 22-inch arm, and tomorrow, thousand people, they're going to scream, USA, USA, put it in the gonna butter me. Then he just stops. and then Nikolai jumps in and starts speaking Russian. You know, everything falls off the rails from there.
I think it fell off the rails when he stops and the interviewer is just kind of like holding the mic.
Yeah.
Like, are you done?
and then at the end, like, he gets back on there, and like, Volkov, I don't even know what the hell he said, man.
It doesn't matter.
I don't even know if it was in English, right? But then, and then Sheik just gets up, and he was yoked back then, right? So he gets up and he starts flexing. He's like, Iran gonna be number one, Russia gonna be number one. And then he just kind of goes off at the end. But it was awesome, Sheik, before he became some... ranting.
He was Iron Sheik. He was Iron Sheik before Iron Sheik became cool, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was just good. It was a good like angry promo and a pretty decent like anti-American promo for what it was at the time. And I just like the whole 22-inch neck and the 22-inch arms.
22-inch neck and yes. The 22-inch arms.
Yes. he had to show how close his arms were to Hulk Hogan's.
And tomorrow, thousand and thousand people is being USA, USA, but that nobody me.
Yeah. And then it's funny then, like, that's kind of like, I don't know, for me, like, that's the memorable promo of his career. And then when he reemerged was when he had his famed shoot promo or shoot interview, pretty much going back talking about WrestleMania 3.
And the wife will always laugh at that fucking promo.
Yeah.
You know, he punk. He fag. He worse than your Michael Jackson.
He was lucky that I didn't put him in camel clutch, break his back, then fuck his ass to make him humble, old country babe. Because I have respect for my sport, respect for my country, and...
And that was the other time where the guy that was shooting interviewing, he's just like sitting there going like,
Doug Maloney.
He's like, how do you feel about the Killer Bees? Like, Jim Brunzel.
So great, Jim Brunzelli, great athlete in Minnesota. But
Brian.
Fuck Brian Blair.
Fuck Brian Blair.
You was lucky, you punk.
Break his back. Fuck him in the ass. Make him humble.
Old country way. Yeah. That became the joke with you and Jason, right? Old country way?
I guess so. I don't know. There's a lot of jokes that he had, but that's definitely one of them.
And then this is going to be way tangent, but one of the better signs, I don't know if you remember this, but there's one of the better signs I remember seeing in a Raw arena was someone had a sign there in the third row.
Yeah.
Said, Bella Twins, Old Country Way.
I missed the Bella Twins. okay, so we're good on that.
You're on for this one.
I'm on for this.
Oh. I can't do the trifecta today.
Okay, you can't do the trifecta, so now you're putting me on the spot. I'm going to have to...
I carry the rest of the show.
No. Word up, Kurt. Yo, man. This is Rob.
I think Rob's going to do this.
Word up, Kurt. Word up, Kurt. Yo, man. My name's Bad News Rob, man. Yo, peep this. Get on the dance floor. All right, so let's see if I can go back in the annals and try to think of a wrestling match that I remember and respect. I got one. So Jericho tag teaming with Eddie Guerrero versus Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko. You remember those matches? They had a run of like maybe 3 weeks straight where
WWE or
WCW? WCW.
Okay.
Where they put on some.
Was this when Malenko and Benoit were horsemen? When they're trying to become horsemen?
Probably. You know, it's all kind of cloudy back then because you really don't know what WCW is kind of going on. And if you really kind of want to get a different perspective about WCW, listen to both podcasts that Stone Cold did with Eric Bischoff. Like, I've never been a fan of Eric Bischoff, but after listening to these two podcasts, I was like, okay, I can kind of, you know, the guy is very learned, you know, in terms of the stuff that he did. And, you know, it's very easy to bag on Eric Bischoff, especially what he did with Ric Flair. But it was very interesting to kind of hear him kind of like, you know, Stone Cold asked a great question. You know, if you could do, actually, he didn't ask it, but someone emailed the Stone Cold Show. And it was like, if you could do anything different, what would you do? And he's like, well, I really can't. You know, it's like, I really can't say what I'd do differently, all, but I probably would have said no to Thunder. You know, I think Thunder really kind of,
watered it down.
Yeah. So, this was when it was Malenko and Benoit, when they're both doing face runs. And then you had Eddie Guerrero and Chris Jericho. Jericho, towards the end, they're both like monster heels. And they played the monster heels great. And the second that I start telling you about this match, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But, so, of course, Benoit had the crippled crossface. Stinko Malenko had the Texas Cloverleaf, and that was kind of the finishing moves. And they had about 3 weeks worth of matches where just really great spots, right? Just like if you wanted to know like what a kind of a vanilla midget babyface was, it was Benoit and Malenko. And if you want to know like the like everything that you want to know as like a really cowardly heel, is done by Jericho and Guerrero. So the second that, so you'd have like these 10-minute matches or 15-minute matches, even with like commercial breaks and stuff, right? And it's really good matches, you know, back and forth, this and this. But the second, and what really always stood out to me for these matches, the second that the second that Benoit and Malenko would put him in a the submission maneuver, Guerrero or Jericho would tap out like within like two, like a second, right? And I just remember those matches going like, I was like, man, how the hell could you just like kill these matches with like a quick tap out, right? But then after that, I was like, dude, I'm like, this is what, and they're doing like wrestling 101 here. You know, this is like everything that worked in Mexico. And this is something that speaks to like all continents, right? Japan, the U.S., Canada is not a separate continent from the U.S., but, you know, every major wrestling promotion, right? Puerto Rico, Japan, Canada, the U.S. and Mexico. It's like you had like this like really like kind of, weak ass heel that's just like a total like coward, and these two guys played the cowardly role like to a T. And do you remember those matches where there was like tap out real fast?
I don't know, because I remember Jericho tapping out quick, but I don't remember it being like restricted to only one time period. I feel like he did that kind of a, like he used that card a few times, so maybe I did see that some of those matches, but it sounds familiar to me, him tapping out really quickly to submission holds.
And you know what the funny thing is, that, you know, we're bringing this up, right? We're talking about WCW, right? And WCW had, like, whenever we talk about WCW, we're never talking about the main event. We're always talking about, like, an undercard. And we always remember the undercards. And this is what, I mean, like, WCW, what I remember is, like, you don't have Eddie Guerrero in WWE. You don't have Jericho in WWE. And I had like a Saturday morning off for the first time in a long time, and it was my two daughters, and they had, you know, Mario Kart 8 just came out on the Wii U, so I was like, hey, let's watch some CM Punk matches, right? So we're watching Jericho versus CM Punk, and I think that's the match I actually wanted to bring up, but I'm not going to do it now, but because you always said you really liked that match, and screw it, I'm going to bring this match up. I was never a really big fan of that match, and I was like, oh, that's okay. But then just watching like what that match was, because they started off with like Big Johnny coming out to CM Punk going like, oh, if you get disqualified, you're going to lose the belt. And so you kind of had like CM Punk playing the face role, like getting all mad and angry and stuff. And so the first like 5 minutes of the match, like Jericho is just like, he's getting pounded in the corner, right? And the refs count, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. He's like, Punk, you got to get out. You know, this end is so Punk gets out. And so the whole thing is so, like Jericho.
He tried to stay in the corner, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then he goes back to the corner so Punk can beat up on him again. Mm-hmm. But the best thing about that match is that Jericho goes, hey, Punk. How's your dad? And so like so CM Punk gets all mad and starts like, you know, beating him up in the ring again. And so they go out to the ring, they go outside of the ring and stuff, and like, you know, the guys count to like 8 and 9. They both go back in. So Jericho comes back in and he goes, hey, Punk, how's your sister? And so it's just like the first like 10 minutes, he's just like playing that flipping like disqualification card, right?
Yeah.
And then they just have like this great match. It's just like Jericho, all the stuff, all the shamrocks and shenanigans that he was doing leading up to the match, you know, talking about his family and stuff, and that whole storyline is just gone by the wayside. And then they actually have like a really good match. And what kind of people forget is that they're going back and forth, and Jericho hits the Codebreaker on CM Punk, and CM Punk is jumping off the top rope and he hits the Codebreaker. And, you know, Punk rolls out and stuff, right? So it's just really good. And then CM Punk hits the go to sleep on Jericho. And Jericho, typical heel fashion, puts his leg on the rope. Just, like, really old school stuff. Stuff I used to love, like, watching Flair do. They're doing it. And then they start going back and forth and they're trading. Probably the best spot in the match was Jericho puts on the lion tamer on CM Punk. And it's just, like, pretty much a Boston Crab, right? CM Punk starts crawling over to the rope to grab the rope, and of course, like some of the best spots ever, given, you know, granted to say like Chris Benoit to the Canadian Cream Team, which is Chris Benoit and Bret the Hitman Hart. They walk him back to the center ring and put it on again, and this time around, Jericho puts on like the lion tamer that you saw in WCW, just like that. Kick-ass lion, yeah, just a high-angle lion tamer, right? And then it turns out, like, you know, CM Punk tries to put the GTS on twice. Jericho breaks out of it, and then the best thing about just the storytelling of this match is that CM Punk puts Jericho in the Anaconda Vice, right? And Anaconda Vice is like, how do you get out of the Anaconda Vice? Like, nobody gets out of the Anaconda Vice. Well, Jericho starts like kneeing him in the head, right? Just flipping epic stuff, right? And so they break out of it, and then CM Punk puts him back in again. And then he's close to the ropes. You're thinking like, okay, Jericho's going to go to the ropes and break up the hold, right? And so then CM Punk puts like this crazy like flipping angle on the Anaconda Vice, right? And Jericho's trying to knee him, right? And he knees him like once, and then CM Punk repositions himself, right? And Jericho's trying to knee him in the head, but he can't do it because he can't reach him. And he finally taps out. And I'm sitting there going like, motherfucker, dude, you better have my donuts over here was right. You know, it's like that was a flipping great match. And that's why I'm saying, like, after watching that match, I'm like, dude, the singles match in WWE right now is flipping dead because you don't have the ring generals doing that. Even like when they were doing that match and CM Punk is talking in Jericho's ear, right? Like, you know that he's talking in his ear, right? And it's just fun to watch, like, CM Punk like is like whispering in Jericho's ear. And they have like a great spot of like 5 or 6 moves. And then Jericho talks to CM Punk's ear. It's like you have two ring generals, both of them respect each other. And the whole thing is that there's no kind of like, well, who's the ring general here, right? It's like both of them are ring generals in the ring. They're playing off of the crowd in terms of what they want to do. Everything is scripted out, but they're able to improvise at that point in time. And it's just a great flip match to watch.
Let me ask this. You always said you didn't like that match or it didn't do anything for you. Was that because at the time you knew Punk was going to win?
No, it's just because, and you know what the funny thing was? The thing that I didn't like about that match, what I like about it now, was I didn't like, I felt it was really cheap heat.
The How's Your Dad stuff?
Yeah, like Jericho's character was so established, he didn't need to go to that. And CM Punk was kind of towing that line right when he was like, he was monster as a face, and then they started putting him in that face role, right? And I was kind of rebelling against, like, dude, don't put CM Punk in that face role because he doesn't need that. And so that's what I was rebelling against. But then after 3 years, you know, and watching it again, going like, and then just watching it for what it was, and to a case where I'm thinking like, okay, anybody can just like sit down and not know any of the storyline and watch this match, it was great.
Right. And that's, you know, not to go away, but that's the point I was trying to make about like Ziggler and the Rollins match. And I understand what you're saying about like the predictability, like hurting the way you feel about it, but in a vacuum, they're great matches, and I think if you go back in a few years and just watch it as its match, it's going to be a good match. And I
totally agree with you. And that's why. That's what I was thinking too when I was watching that match. Right. You know, and I was thinking about, and when I was watching that CM Punk match, I was thinking, okay, what about Ziggler? Like, if I'm in a vacuum like 3 years from now, am I going to appreciate more what Ziggler did? 100% yes. And the funny thing is, I appreciate what Ziggler's doing now.
It's just hard because it's frustrating. I got you. Okay. All right. Well, good. See, we're able to come together there at the end.
Yeah. You know, we're able to do our three segments and kind of, you know, complete the circle of life. Mustafa is still alive and Simba. Mufasa, whatever. Mustafa. I like Mustafa better because, you know, common Mustafa.
I actually saw yesterday, I was flipping through HBO and freaking Conan was on, dude. So, something like Lisa's in the kitchen. She's like,
which one?
The first one.
Okay. With Arnold.
Yeah, Arnold.
Okay.
Yeah. And Lisa, and the bad guy was James Earl Jones. She's like, is that Mufasa? It's like, yeah, but really it's Darth Vader. She's like, oh, yeah.
And then he turns into a snake. You're like, what the hell is this?
Dude, that was the snake. I didn't
the
say
snake. The snake.
God. Getting the willies in there.
What's in the bag, Jesse? So, all right. So, Miskill number 78. Hey, thanks for coming by, of course, as always. Very fun to do. We're at like an hour and a half, so even though wrestling hasn't been my cup of tea as of late, we can still have some fun doing it. So, Miskill number 78, I have my boy, Bet How Many Donuts, over here with his 54 followers. I am I am Bad News Ramen with my 627 followers. I'm going to get 700 pretty soon. Just you wait. Just you wait, man.
You got to.
Can I have some decorum here?
You will get those 700 followers, John. All you got to do is believe.
With the most Asian white guy around. The most Asian looking white guy around, dude. Get a better finisher, please. I mean, like, do some like some page finishers or something, because that bow dog is flipping terrible. So Moose Skill number 78. We'll check you out guys next week, and we're good from there.
Hey, check it out. My name Cool Breeze, and I can't lie. I'm still teacher's pet at Carter High, and I'm real laid back and like one of a kind. And if I leave Eastport, it'll be hard to find. Rico used to tell me when I turn 19, I'ma be big in the South like buffalo wings. And I've been blowing up the spot since the single came out. And I'm starting to make a little money. It's getting hard to count. Cause if I carry any with me, it's in a small amount. And I keep the rest in the stash by my auntie house. So check the internet for when I hit your local stages of the Dirty South pages under South Coast phrases.
Hey, you got that? Yeah.